Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A new survey shows that the percentage of white students in every Franklin County school district, public school district, I should say, has decreased while the populations of students of color have grown. The growing diversity reflects the increase of Asian, Hispanic, and multiracial students more than anything, and much of the change is occurring in our suburban schools. So what do these changes in diversity mean for students, public school districts, and the future of Central Ohio? Later on this hour, we'll talk with Stephanie Hightower. She's the president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League. It's one of the organizations behind the diversity report. Joining us now is Mark Reel. He's the founding president and CEO of KidsOhio.org. It's a nonprofit organization that studies education issues. KidsOhio.org also sponsored the new report entitled Franklin County and Ohio's Public School Students Are More Diverse Than Ever. We'll post a link to that report on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome to the show, Mark Reel.
Thank you, Ann.
So, Mark Reel, the new report gives a snapshot in time, as they all do, of the diversity of students in the Franklin County and Ohio public school districts. It also breaks down the percentages of types of students for each of the 16 Franklin County school districts. Let's start with an overview first. One of the major findings of the new report is that 42.8% of the students in Franklin County school districts last year were children of color. That's up from 34% in 2001. That's a big jump.
It is. And that's the reason we did the report, is to really capture these trends over a 10-year period of time, which I think most people consider to be significant. And as you pointed out, I mean, a lot of the growth has been in three groups of students: multiracial students, which was a classification that wasn't available 10 years ago.
And what does that mean?
It means, first of all, the student or parents, it's self-described. But for example, if your father was Asian and your mother was Caucasian, or your father's Hispanic and your mother is African American. So it's different combinations. Families can decide if that's a category they're comfortable with, but it's a fast growing category across the country and in Central Ohio. And almost 6% of students are in that, declare that. The other two groups that are growing are Asian students and Hispanic students. And again, these are not monolithic groups. You have within those categories, you've got people with very high income and very high parental education, as well as people with modest levels of both income and education. But it does illustrate the changes in Central Ohio. The other thing you pointed out is there's been a decline in the number of black students and
percentage-wise.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the rate, and there's also been a slight decline in the percentage of black students. And so, you know, this reflects national trends as well.
Diversity in Franklin County and Ohio, it's become more diverse with, as you said, Asians, Hispanics, and multiracial students, big part of the change. Tell us about them and what kind of challenges that poses, as opposed to the diversity that we traditionally think of as black versus white or mm-hmm. black and white.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's two things. One is that you see this, as you point out, the suburban, almost half of the students of color are enrolled in a suburban school district. So it's very different from the 1960s idea that people had where the city was diverse, but the suburbs were largely Caucasian. That's really an artifact of the past, okay? All of the suburban districts have at least double-digit diversity, with the exception of Grandview Heights. Many of them have 30% or greater. So in almost half of the children of color in this county attend a suburban school system. So there's really been an ongoing change, as you point out, 9 percentage point gain in the decade, but an ongoing change that we're seeing in every single school district. And of course, this can be very advantageous to school districts too. When you have people, you have students from other countries, it makes the geography lessons come alive.
My guest is Mark Reel. He's president and CEO of KidsOhio.org. It's a nonprofit organization and one of the two sponsors of a new report entitled Franklin County and Ohio's Public School Students Are More Diverse Than Ever. So even among these groups, though, there's a lot of diversity among them, mm-hmm. and education and economic backgrounds. They're not all immigrants, and they're not all poor or wealthy or anything.
No, I mean, let's take Asian students, for example. There would be a significant difference between someone who is a Taiwanese medical student at Ohio State University and someone who was very poor who moved here from Malaysia. So, that would be one illustration. African students, it's well known that Columbus has a large Somali population. Some of them are middle-class business people, but many of them are people from villages where, you know, they're learning their way in a Western society. So there's a big difference there. Somali is also not a written language for the most part. So you have students who are learning to write as well as read and write.
In another language.
Right, right. Or, you know, Mexico would be another example. We have students from Chiapas, which is the southern part of Mexico on the Guatemalan border. Very poor Indian tribes. Many people there don't even speak or read Spanish. And then you've got people who come from the middle class part of Mexico, like the Monterrey area, who come and their parents may be second or third generation college graduates. So it's important not to overgeneralize.
And the overall tone of the report, we can go into more specifics later, but is positive.
Yes.
That this is you're not just trying to spin it that way. You really think that this is positive.
Well, let's take Dublin, for example. Mm-hmm. Almost 30% of students in Dublin are children of color. I think everyone acknowledges Dublin's one of the highest achieving school districts in the state of Ohio. So, you know, I think this is important to I think we want to help educate people about what are the new realities of schools. And we've done other reports. We did a report, for example, on the rise in poverty in suburban districts. We did a report on high poverty schools that are also high achieving. And so this is part of a series to educate ourselves about what are the new realities of education. And this is certainly a new reality and we think a very positive reality. And I want to say a word here for the 15 suburban school districts in Franklin County. They're obviously welcoming places to children who are different. I mean, you wouldn't have 30% of students in a school district. You know, a lot of people choose where they live by word of mouth. So I want to commend the superintendents and school boards and teachers and principals in those districts for being welcoming. And I think that speaks well for those school districts.
But they were on a steep learning curve because this happened very quickly, really, over the last 10 years. Right. And then in traditional school, you know, operations, that's fast.
Right, right. No, and I think they'll be very – when you talk to them, they're very frank about that. Mm-hmm. They're very frank about the fact that they've had to change. You know, all of us have had to learn more about other people. And sometimes people who don't look like us or don't come from similar backgrounds. That is, I think most people agree, excellent preparation for the workforce because most of us will be working with people who are different than we are.
And the larger world is what's happening in the districts is just a reflection of the larger world.
Right. It's no longer an abstract concept when you talk about what are India and China doing competitively, which is a big theme, for example, in business magazines, big theme when people talk about job growth. When you know students who are from those countries or, you know, and you know families, I think that really aids a lot in your understanding.
Can you give us some examples of how, I mean, you're talking about kids that are coming into the schools from different countries, but they're not a lot of them are learning English as a second language. How do they really participate fully in that way?
Well, Columbus, for example, Columbus Schools, which has a significant and a growing number of immigrant, about 1 out of 10 students in Columbus Schools is now an immigrant. They have welcome centers, and they and the suburban districts and the charter schools all assess students on an individual basis, given what we talked about, the differences of educational background and income background. And at the welcome centers in Columbus, they put a specific emphasis on helping children who are mastering English. And also children who may be living in a different culture. This is their first time in the West. So if you've come here from a refugee camp in Kenya, you may need some help with indoor plumbing. You're not sure about some of the electronics that we have in school. So they help students get up to par on those issues. They also work with parents so that parents are more comfortable knowing what the school is doing. And, you know, teachers who teach in those centers, incidentally, report that discipline is very good and that there's a lot of eagerness to learn on the part of students. And I think in the suburban districts, they mirror that. They may not have a formal center, but they have somebody's assigned to be welcoming to those students and to make sure that they're, you know, they have English as a second language classes, for example. But also, I think helping families reach out to service providers that they may need for other family needs. And again, this varies all over. You've got high income people coming into some of these districts too, and their need may simply be English language proficiency.
To what extent is this change affecting the bottom line for school districts? Is it expensive, and are they getting the funding they need, or are they cutting something somewhere else?
Well, there are initially higher short-term costs, but in many cases there are longer-term rewards. An example would be the Columbus School District. As I mentioned, about 10% of their student body are immigrants. However, when you compare the graduation, so the question comes, are they a drag on the school district? And initially, many of them need help in terms of learning English, so that's a short-term issue. But the graduation rate among immigrant students is actually higher than it is among students who are born in the U.S. So that ought to be a prod to us. But so the longer-term rewards are very positive.
After the break, Stephanie Hightower, she's president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League, and you can save your questions for her if you want. You can also find us on Facebook, the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and you can tweet me at AnnFisherWOSU.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to join All Sides with Ann Fisher for a special broadcast on location at WOSU Ecosi. Be a part of the studio audience on Tuesday, February 14th from 10 until noon. In the first hour, we'll discuss the current challenges facing Columbus's historic urban neighborhood, Franklinton. And then in the second hour, we'll celebrate Columbus's bicentennial with Mayor Michael Coleman and a panel. Join All Sides at WOSU at COSI and be a part of our studio audience, Tuesday, February 14th, from 10 until noon.
Support for 89.7 comes from WOW Internet Cable and Phone, with 66 bundle packages to choose from, including 4 internet speeds, multiple cable packages, and 3 calling plans. More information at wowway.com or 8664-WOW-NOW.
Snow likely today, mainly later this evening, a high of 35 degrees. Snow expected tonight, another 1 to 2 inches, and a low of 20 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Today we're talking about a new report on the diversity of Franklin County and Ohio public school students. Still with us is Mark Real. He's the president and CEO of KidsOhio.org, one of the organizations behind the report. Joining us now is Stephanie Hightower. She became the 8th president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League last July. Stephanie Hightower most recently was vice president of institutional advancement at Columbus College of Art and Design. She also served as a member of the Columbus City School Board and was president of the school board for 4 years, from 2001 to 2005. The Columbus Urban League, along with KidsOhio.org, sponsored the new report entitled Franklin County and Ohio's Public School Students Are More Diverse Than Ever. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Thank you, Ann. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Stephanie.
We've gone over, Stephanie, some of the major findings in the new report, and we're going to post a link to that report, by the way, to everybody on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. It looks at the range of diversity of students in each of the 16 Franklin County school districts, white, black, Asian, Hispanic, and multiracial students. So, Stephanie, why this report and why now and why the Columbus Urban League?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, Mark always partners or creates great partnerships with agencies within the city. And so this was an opportunity for us, since, you know, one of our 5 focus areas is education, and also we look at, you know, the issues of race and diversity in our community. You know, we thought this was, you know, an ideal partnership for us to join the bandwagon with Mark and KidsOhio.org to talk about diversity in the diversity gap in teaching. So, you know, right now, you know, when you look at nationally, there have been, you know, numerous reports over the last couple of years that have, you know, talked about staffing in schools and about the need for teacher diversity. And the reality is, and, you know, as Mark has pointed out and what the report points out, is that teacher diversity does matter. It definitely matters.
In terms of that, is there a comparison we can draw between, say, the urban districts and the suburban districts?
Well, you know what? I think it's really not a matter of, you know, drawing, you know, really putting it in that framework.
Okay.
I would frame it up as basically saying that, you know, and there are studies that are basically showing that kids who and students who have teachers and administrators that look like them, they do perform better, and they feel as if there is someone who understands them. And it doesn't matter if you are in a suburban district or if you are in the Columbus Public School District. Young people, and I used to always say this when I was a member of the Columbus School Board, kids need to see what they can be. And I think as a society, you know, whether you are African American or Asian or Hispanic, in order for you to aspire to do greater and bigger things, you need to have that exposure of individuals around you. And teachers are professionals, and if, you know, we want, you know, our children or to even to start considering going into the teaching profession, and we know that, you know, when you start looking at the teaching profession as a whole, you know, we don't have as many folks that are going into the profession right now. They need to see our students, need to see people that look like them.
Mark Reel, is this one of the challenges that the suburban districts are facing? Because they're not doing a lot of hiring right now, and a lot of them already have a great teaching staff. Per se, there's no,
it's a challenge for both urban. It's a challenge for everybody, urban mm-hmm. and suburban districts, and for charter schools. The good news is that students of color have many more career choices. So bright, accomplished people who 20 years ago might have selected teaching as a career now can go into the biosciences, they can go into computer technology. So, you know, there's more competition, which is a good thing for the students. But I think it's fair to say that every single school district in Franklin County is actively searching for teachers who represent this kind of diversity.
Your report also looked at the diversity of public charter schools. You mentioned that a couple times and found that 10 years ago when charters were new to Ohio, 87% of the students were minorities. But now about 63% are non-white, and that means more white students are attending public charter schools. However, it's especially true, well, there is a rapidly growing virtual charter school business in Ohio, and that 77% of those students are white.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at those larger numbers of whites in the charter schools, are most of them going to the virtual schools? It's not really like the schoolrooms are more diverse than so.
Some are, but for the most part, what you see are African American parents are selecting brick and mortar schools, and white parents are selecting virtual schools or e-schools. And so what you've had is, as you pointed out, is an influx of white students. You've also had a big increase in number in the last decade. A decade ago, there were very few students in charter schools, about 2,000 in Franklin County.
Altogether, right.
Now you've got 18,000. Last year, you had 18,000 in Franklin County, about 5,000 of whom attend suburban school systems, and over 100,000 statewide. So this is a choice that many parents are making, and you know, they're looking. The charter schools look much like the districts where they are located. So if you have a district that has a lot of 90% minority schools, that's pretty much what the brick-and-mortar charter schools look like, too.
Stephanie, what does it tell you about the relationship between charters, as a former school board member, school board president, between charters and the public's classrooms?
Well, you know what? I think this all comes down to competition. And, you know, for many years, you know, the public school districts were, you know, the only game in town. And so now that parents have alternatives and they have an alternative that is cost effective, you know, before the only alternative was probably private or parochial schools, which, you know, the public school districts technically, you know, did not compete with. Now that we have the charter schools, I just think that people have other alternatives. And at the end of the day, you know, all of us, I don't care what your ethnic background is or color of your skin or what your socioeconomic status is, we all want the best education for our children. And we don't want cookie-cutter type education anymore either. And so what I think folks are doing and parents are doing are they are shopping around for the kind of education, because people are more astute about this, the kind of education that they think is going to be in the best interest of their kids. And so that's why I think you have the charter school movement is beginning to grow, you know, more and more, not only in Ohio, but across this country.
Majority, we said 63% were non-white in the charter schools. What do we know about them? I mean, is it mostly immigrants? Is it mostly native-born? What do we, because that's a big difference,
right,
in certain terms of the challenges.
Right. Most of the students are native-born. They're African-Americans. And you also see representation of Hispanics and Asians, but in slightly smaller numbers than you do in district schools. But I think the thing, you know, as Stephanie pointed out, you've got 1.5 million children in charter schools in 41 states. This is something that's growing all across the country. And I think we can expect the charters to look more and more like district schools as they become a choice for more children.
So, Stephanie Hightower, what role, how does this redefine or finesse the role of the Columbus Urban League in this issue?
Well, you know, one of the things that I would like for us to take a look at is, you know, we have tutorial programs and we have significant early learning childhood program Head Start here. And so one of the things as we begin to look at these numbers, and, you know, we are also looking at the population of our young children who are coming into Head Start. And one of the things that I've talked to our Head Start director about is looking at our recruitment process, looking for individuals who are bilingual. If we need to look at their compensation packages a little bit differently because they bring that diversity, I mean, they bring that ability to the table, we're going to start looking at that as a major recruitment piece. You know, we're also going to look at how we can, through our public schools and through suburban schools and then link up with higher education, how we can begin to create a pipeline of individuals who are interested in early learning, childhood teaching, and start to begin to create that kind of pipeline of teachers. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that we're looking at in our approach to trying to improve teacher diversity just within our Head Start program. You know, and let me, I want to back up just real quick,
sure,
and if you don't mind.
No.
You know, as we're talking about, you know, teacher diversity does matter. The bottom line here, and I hope we do not forget it, is that, you know, a good teacher is a good teacher no matter what their ethnic background is. And I think ultimately that's what we should be striving for. So having effective teachers in front of children is the bottom line. But it's also important to have more teachers who do look like students that they teach, so that those young people can feel as if they have someone that they can connect to.
We're talking about a new report that's out that looks at the growing diversity in Ohio's public schools, from the urban centers to the suburban centers. Mark, did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to. Say, when you look, Franklin County is a leader across the state, in part because our economy's been better. People have moved here. More diverse people have moved here in order to take jobs. But there's been a growth statewide in the number of students of color, it's been relatively modest. It has not matched what's going on in Central Ohio. So Central Ohio has this as an economic advantage, I think.
Comment from a listener says she's concerned that some teachers in Central Ohio are ignoring cultural diversity by favoring Christmas and other Christian holidays. It makes it difficult for the few Jewish or Muslim students in the classroom, and wonders what is being done to teach tolerance and respect for diverse cultural traditions in the classroom.
You know what? I will just say that, you know, when you look at Columbus Public Schools policy, while I was the school board president, we made sure that there was a policy, and there are policies in place that actually address those kinds of issues, because we had issues where, you know, when you look at our graduation, that was one of the big kickers when I was on the school board, about, you know, the type of music that was actually played during graduation ceremonies, whether it, you know, should be, you know, religious music or non-secular music. And so if you look at Columbus Public Schools, I know I can proudly say that that is an issue that has been addressed. I can't speak for the other suburban or parochial schools. I know at my son's school, when he was in a private school here in Columbus, that there was always the issue of that with the Jewish community, and I know in time they did fix that policy as well. So I think it's a matter of parents need to speak out on these issues, and they need to hold their school boards accountable to be able to address issues such as that.
Mark?
I think there's a lot of activity in charter schools and suburban district schools about this, too. I think there's a high level of awareness. Christmas is obviously an important holiday for lots of Americans, setting aside what your own personal beliefs are. So it ought to be acknowledged, but other celebrations ought to be acknowledged as well. And I think that's what you're seeing in schools is much more inclusion in terms of other cultures and other approaches. And again, I think this is healthy. And there are examples of where teachers will involve local families, ask the parents to come in and help explain customs to the class, and often to other members of the faculty who may be learning about this for the first time. So I think again, this is a good thing. It helps us learn about other cultures and helps us be more aware of the world at large.
Is there any district out there you think is doing a particularly good job, or that you're working a lot with? Or,
well, I think the Reynoldsburg School District, which is a very diverse school district, and also happens to be a high poverty school district, and one that's changed a lot since the 1960s, when it was largely a suburban middle class district, and now it's a much more multicultural district and poverty. I think they've done a very outstanding job of both improving academics, but also helping their students learn more about each other. They also sponsor two charter schools, so they're very aware of the fact that their parents have different needs for different children.
This affects something as basic as what you can get in the lunchroom at lunchtime.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to be sensitive, for example, to serving pork. There are a number of cultures where people don't eat pork. And, again, school districts, I think, have really been thoughtful about this, both in the suburbs and in the city. It's not to say that here or there might not be an example. But, school administrators are pretty savvy, I think, about the changing needs of their students, and pork would be one issue.
From Jody on Facebook, she writes, I second your guest's comment about the growing diversity in Dublin. I worked the census in 2010 in Dublin, and I visited homes of many nationalities. I had to use an interpreter for one Japanese home. It was an eye-opener for me after thinking Dublin was primarily the Muirfield crowd. Stephanie Hightower, with respect to that, you're president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League. How does that connect with the suburban experience, which is more pronounced right now?
Well, you know what? One of the things that we are finding here at the Columbus Urban League, and as it relates especially in our housing department, with the economy, still, dragging along as it has, and with the mortgage crisis, that has gone on in this country, we are beginning to find that we are seeing more and more families and individuals from the majority community that are coming through our doors because of the services that we provide. Having said that, Anne, one of the things that while primarily, the Columbus Urban League has served the African-American community and those disadvantaged individuals, we are now looking at, and what I have said to our board is that urban no longer, means African-American, that, urban communities now are comprised of many cultures. And so we are more multicultural in the urban setting. And so one of the things that you're going to see from the Columbus Urban League starting in 2012 is that we are going to be reaching out to all ethnic groups, making sure that we are advertising that all ethnic groups know about the services that we provide for the urban communities. Because, again, it is not just about African-American when you talk about urban, but it is about the multicultural and the diversity of our community now, and that we're here to be able to serve those individuals that are disadvantaged and in need.
I applaud that for the Urban League's mission. Let me just give you a couple illustrations locally. It might be helpful to people. Cornell Winchester, 27.8% of its students are minorities or children of color. Dublin, 29.3%. Gahanna, 30.9%. Groveport-Madison, 46%. I think this is newsworthy to a lot of people. New Albany, 23%. So I think you know this is our point: is that almost every district has more than 20% of their children who are children of color, and you know you look at Bexley, 17.5%. Look at Upper Arlington, 10%. And our experience is that this is newsworthy to a lot of people. We actually, a number of community leaders have gotten back in touch with us and said, gee, thanks. That helps us think about this differently than we had been.
Each individual district knew what their numbers mm-hmm. were, but were they surprised to find out how this played out across the region?
I think so. I think people are – I think this kind of comparative information. We've also had a couple people from recruiting departments for corporations get in touch with us and say they really appreciated this because when they're trying to recruit diverse applicants from across the country to come to Columbus, this is a good example of you've got a lot of choices here where your children could be comfortable in their school system.
And you know, the other thing I'd like to add mm-hmm. is, you know, being able to put out a report like this, an informative report like this for the public, I think it also, as Mark just said, it also validates the need for maybe budgetary actions or different kinds of actions that administrators and management of school districts have probably been hamstrung for not being able to achieve. And so by being able to put a report out like this, yes, I'm sure that they did know that they had the increase mm-hmm. in numbers, but to be able to have an outside entity validate those numbers, validate that there is a need to have, you know, a diverse teaching population, I think it will help those administrators as they're going through and looking at their budgets and doing some things that they probably wanted to do in the past and weren't able to do. It'll give them some ammunition to be able to do that now.
We're talking about a new report on the diversity of Franklin County and Ohio public school students. Still with us, Mark Real, president and CEO of KidsOhio.org, and also Stephanie Hightower, president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League, co-sponsors of the study. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Last week on Car Talk, we demonstrated our usual sensitivity to callers with serious car problems.
I would like it better if I was gone out of here for a month.
Are you ready to come home now, Carla?
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to go
Would you
home.
Like us to help you fix your truck so you can drive home?
Will you promise that you'll drive home if we tell you how to fix the truck?
And stay home?
Don't miss the fun this week.
Join us for Car Talk.
Car Talk tomorrow at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And join us in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock for All Sides Weekend with host Christopher Purdy and a discussion of best books for late winter reading. Stay with us for All Sides Weekend from 11 till noon.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Metropolitan Club presenting their weekly forum. Wednesday at noon, it's Getting Off the Bus, a discussion with outgoing COTA CEO Bill Loda upon his retirement. More information and tickets at columbusmetroclub.org.
31 degrees in downtown Columbus. Expect a high of 35 with cloudy skies today. Snow moves in later this evening, right around 5 o'clock. You can expect 1 to 2 inches of snow overnight tonight, a low of 20 degrees. And then a chance of snow for Saturday and cold, a high of just 25. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about a new report on the diversity of Franklin County and Ohio public school districts. If you have a question or comment for our guests, Mark Real, president and CEO of KidsOhio.org, or Stephanie Hightower, president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Farah? In Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. My question is basically, I was listening and I heard that there's, there's need for diversity both teaching SAC and as well as the programs that we need to employ to help our students. Now, what we do is basically we have a nonprofit organization that helps minority students try to go from high school and instead of just graduating there, go on to university. So we're trying to establish partnerships and all that, and we're basically a startup nonprofit organization. I'm wondering if the panel has any suggestions or websites or organizations, be it theirs or others, that could help with that, because we're doing a lot of this work and on a voluntary basis. I myself teach at the Columbus City Schools, but the work is getting more cumbersome and harder to do without the partnerships that we need.
Tell us the name of your organization first.
Oh, it's called Minorities Education and Professional Development.
Okay.
North America, yeah, but it's based out of Columbus, Ohio.
This is Stephanie Hightower. We would love to have a conversation with you regarding the minority students' high school to college track that you are involved with. And I can't speak for, and I've only been here for a short period of time, other organizations who might be doing similar things, but we definitely have a program here, and if there's a way for us to look at creating a partnership, we would be anxious to have a conversation with you.
That'd be very nice. And your organization, you said once more, was?
The Columbus Urban League.
Columbus Urban League. Thank you very much. And your other guest, is he there or has he left?
Yeah,
yep.
No,
Mark Reel's
still here. We'd be happy to do it as well. Let me give you our phone number, and it's 228-6400. How about call and leave your information, and Stephanie and I will get back to you.
We'll have all the phone numbers and links to the organizations as well on our website at wosu.org/allsides. And you can go there and get everything you need, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excellent program as usual.
Thank you. Good luck with your program.
Thanks.
Mohammed in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Mohammed.
Yes. I had one question for both guests that are here today.
Mm-hmm.
We find that most people that graduate from Columbus Public Schools, if you look at a particular minority, especially the Somali minority, we find that when they go into college, they tend to score low on their placement scores, very low sometimes, to a point where they're put into basic arithmetics, and you find that those kids are perhaps they started school here in the fifth grade or elementary middle school. So if I could get a comment for that, please.
Okay. Kind of gets to the ongoing, lifelong education issue. How do they move on to that next step? Mark Reel?
Well, you're identifying a problem that's not limited, unfortunately, to the Somali community, which is we have way too many students who are not prepared to do college work. Columbus State reports on this regularly. About 40% of their new high school graduates who are coming to Columbus State have to take a remedial course in either English or math. I think to the credit of the new president at Columbus State, David Harrison, he's reaching out to school districts to improve the preparation in middle school and high school, which is, I think, what you were suggesting, so that more students are ready for college-level work.
And Mohammed, this is Stephanie Hightower from the Columbus Urban League. As Mark just pointed out, David Harrison is reaching out. He and I have had initial conversations about these issues, and one of the things that we are going to be exploring here at the Columbus Urban League is a partnership where those students that he identifies at Columbus State in particular who may need that remedial coursework, that we will be able to offer it here at the Columbus Urban League. But now that, it's interesting to hear your concerns, there may also be a need for us to maybe even start that sooner, that process sooner at the high school level, as opposed to waiting until they have graduated and then, gone over to, college and then cannot, matriculate. So, again, this is, we're hoping to be that hub in the community, especially for, those minorities and disadvantaged folks, to be able to help them to get where they need to go as it relates to higher education.
Oh, I think I took Mohammed off. Hi, Mohammed. That answer your question?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right, take care. You know, it's hard enough to get into college these days, to pay for it and to get through it. It's even harder yet for first-generation college-bound students. And when you put on that next layer of immigrant, recent immigrant especially, how do you even begin to adjust and help people prepare for something like that? And is that a concern of the high schools?
It is, and it's likely that the state report card is going to be changed to give high schools credit for students who arrive at college remediation free and mm-hmm. who complete a year of college. So I think that'll be an incentive for high schools to do this. But no, it's a big challenge. The good thing across the country is the majority of students of color attend a community college, particularly in their first couple years of college, and that's why I think it's very hopeful to see Columbus State actively reaching out and saying we need to work with high schools to make and middle schools to make sure that these students are prepared, because it doesn't really help you to get to college and then essentially not to be able to succeed there.
Yeah, absolutely. And David Harrison is reaching out. It's not only to the academic institutions, but again, looking to agencies such as the Columbus Urban League to say, okay, you do have tutorial programs, you do have remedial type programs. How can we link all of these up so that people can feel like they have a place where they can come and be successful, or help them to be successful by the time they reach the community college level?
Sean in Columbus, you're a substitute teacher. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I've missed a bit of the show, and from the original opening comments, I thought I might chime in. Sure. As I've seen about 100 different school buildings throughout all the surrounding school districts, I have not been in Columbus Public Schools, but all the ones touching Franklin County and into Delaware, mm-hmm. have noticed over just the last 5 years what the survey obviously pointed out over the last 10 is a lot more Asian students, a lot more sub-Asian Indian students, Pakistanis and so forth. Mm-hmm. And what I haven't noticed, and what I wanted to ask, I guess, and come and ask what you found or thinking about finding, is the students themselves making much of an issue, other than jokingly, of each other's ethnicity, or whether there really are, whether diversity as a layer, a subject of discussion, really is something they have in the forefront of their mind, or whether we really need to get ahead of this and think of some new terms to stay current with them, to discuss it and to maximize the benefit that must be possible with a more a less homogenous population.
Stephanie, you want to take a whack at that one? Stephanie Hightower.
Yeah. I'm not. Can you maybe go back and highlight one little piece here?
The conversation has moved to many important specific things that can be done to help individuals and people that are new. But as a group, has anybody done any surveys or are thinking about, I would suggest you do if you haven't, surveys of the students' attitudes for the term diversity and whether they really feel what their contribution would be in terms of things that they feel are advantages, or whether sometimes racial harmony.
Okay, you know, Sean,
bringing up the issue is a problem.
I just want to kind of summarize. You're talking about the majority students. In other words, how is the student body in general being, not just academically, but socially and beyond that? What's their point of view on this? Is anyone talking to them about it? And Mark Reel, how much are they being brought into the conversation?
This is an area where there's a lot of good work going on, but let's face it, it's incomplete. There needs to be more understanding. And also in the context of the world is changing, we now have majority-minority schools, school districts, and cities. So it's also, and we know that, for example, in some of the interaction between Somali students and students at the schools that they entered, relations were less than perfect. So it's a continuing, I think most teachers and principals would tell you it's a continuing need.
And what can the suburban districts learn from Columbus City Schools, which has been grappling with a lot of these problems a lot longer than suburban districts? Stephanie, any ideas from your experience in that role?
Well, again, you know what? I'm not sure that I'm willing to say today that suburban schools have not been doing what they need to do to address the issue of diversity, and intolerance. You know, again, I think this is one of those topics that, you know, sometimes it's hard to have. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how people have it and the way they have it, people have different ideas and strategies. You know, I would say that, again, you know, because of the diversity that exists in Columbus Public, you are thrust into having to have an appreciation for inclusion and diversity and tolerance. And I, you know, I have to say, I think that they do a pretty good job. You know, Mark pointed out that, you know, Reynoldsburg does a good job. So, you know, I guess what I would like to say and see or really say is that my hope is that through the identification of the numbers that have been pointed out in this report, that the districts not only look at it from the standpoint of teacher recruitment and having effective teachers, but also look at what are they doing as it relates to diversity and inclusion type programming. And those are things that can be added to curriculum, can be done in the schools based upon the leadership, you know, on a one-on-one basis. And I'd hope that across the board, suburban, public, everybody, parochial, private, really would take a look at their student populations and make sure that they do have that these kids do feel that diversity or understand diversity and understand its importance.
Okay, Sean, thanks a lot for that call. An editorial in the Columbus Dispatch responding to your report recently said Central Ohio's future prosperity and quality of life will be greatly affected by how well schools can manage the change in diversity. How does that work? Does that go back to what you were saying earlier on, Mark, about this is what people are looking at, and they're not only looking at the numbers, but how they're being managed?
Right, and also look at the United States. Look at Los Angeles, Miami, New York City, San Francisco, Washington, D.C. Most of us think those are pretty attractive places. Those are majority-minority cities. So I think we want to make – and right now in the United States, nearly half of all births are to minorities. Our country is changing. And cities and regions that embrace that change have the possibility of being prosperous and having a well-educated citizen. And people who resist that, I think, run the risk of being left behind.
Stephanie?
I think Mark really, you know, summed it up. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, because of the multicultural aspects of our city, as Mark pointed out, you know, I believe that as an agency such as the Columbus Urban League, you know, we have to look at our work differently and how we do our work and who we advertise our work to. And that's the kind of thing that we're going to be looking at here at the Columbus Urban League and its future. And we need to embrace and we need to celebrate the diversity that exists in our community. And we're going to begin to develop the kind of programming that does celebrate that diversity.
Bill, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hi. My question is, is there any, I guess, I don't know the way to phrase it, room in there for looking into the undereducated, lower income, or basically poor whites inside the Urban League, because those kids really do need represented. The upper middle class, the wealthy whites, they don't. That's obvious. But there's a large growing population of poor whites that I think are left behind in this, and I just wondered if you could speak to that.
Again, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. As I said earlier, I can't remember, I don't know if you were on the call or not, but when we start talking about urban, we are no longer talking about just the African-American population. And one of the things that we will be doing is we will be reaching out to all of the sectors of the urban community and making sure that they understand the services that we do provide. And what you will find is if you come down into our lobby today, we do not only have minority, meaning African Americans, who are coming here for services, but the demographics are changing on a daily basis. And so I think as we get out and we do a better job of making sure that in our publications, in the different sections of the city that we are advertising in, as we do a better job of letting people know what our services are, I'm sure that we're going to see the demographics shift, and so that any individual in the urban community that is disadvantaged and interested in changing their lives, that they feel comfortable with coming to the Columbus Urban League.
And just to reinforce your point, the group in Columbus schools that has the lowest graduation rate are white males. So your point is well made. We need to go where the needs are.
Thanks a lot, Bill, for that call. Doug on Facebook says Cranbrook Elementary School might be one of the most diverse schools in the country. It's a wonderful Columbus City school that's located northwest of OSU near Kenny Road and Fishinger. One quick question. We're running out of time, but what does the diversity report's findings mean for the opportunities and challenges for traditional African-American students in Franklin County? Any changes for them?
Lots of opportunity and lots of communities.
Stephanie Hightower?
I would say the same thing. You know, one of the things that the African-American community historically understood and really appreciated is the need to have a great education. And I think as we begin to have more of these kinds of reports that come out that really talks about the inclusiveness of all diversity, I think it's only going to strengthen the kinds of efforts and strategies that have been geared towards the African-American students.
Stephanie Hightower, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
Stephanie Hightower is president and CEO of Columbus Urban League. Also, Mark Real, president and CEO of KidsOhio.org. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thank you.
You can find out more information about the study we've been talking about and the organizations we've been talking about at WOSU.org/AllSides. Happy New Year. Welcome back to the All Sides staff. Producer Linda Taylor, associate producer Amy Jurovich, our new interns, Corinne Gleckler and Ayan Sheik. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.